The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
All of us have healing work to do on race and culture topics. We have those questions that seem to be unaskable in today's climate. Now, we have a forum where we can ask experts, listen, and share. Welcome to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. Get ready to engage and add your voice to racial healing in the next hour. Let's start right now. Here's Sharon E. Davis.
Welcome to our show once again, A Safe Place to Talk About Race. I'm delighted that you have taken time out of your day to join us. We have another great program for you today, and this episode title is called Sustaining My Fire for Racial Healing. That's right, Sustaining My Fire for Racial Healing. You know, Mrs. Cherry Steinwinder is a founding member of the first organization to brand itself as Racial Healing in 1989 in Houston, Texas. Cherry hasn't given up or let down ever. The organization, the Center for the Healing of Racism, is going strong. But how do you sustain this kind of effort on this topic for close to 25 years? Is there a pattern or method that lies underneath the floor that holds Cherry and the center up? What does she know that we really need to know about sustaining the journey without getting burned out or collapsing? What has she learned over the years about educating our children or current trends and global racism? After all, you may know the USA Department, the State Department, sends over 50 dignitaries to the center to find out about the quote-unquote American brand of racism. Well, I wonder what Cherry tells them that you may want to know, too. Well, she's also the executive director of the Center for the Healing of Racism in Houston, Texas, and she's the author of the book, Bread is a Simple Food, Teaching Children About Cultures. It's been over 15 years that she's worked with delegations and these dignitaries, and the center is a great resource for visitors entering the country through the U.S. State Department seeking this kind of knowledge about race and racism and especially racial healing. Cherry has numerous awards and honors for her steadfast work in dismantling racism, and she tirelessly contributes with schools for our youngest, to the youngest, to the oldest of the oldest. Welcome to our show, Mrs. Steinwinder.
Thank you so much, Sharon. And, of course, it is a joy to be here with you as well as your listening audience.
Well, it's my pleasure to be able to have you, Cherry. And, you know, we know that racism isn't our fault, that we were born into parts of this story, but that we don't really know the other stories and that we continue to just dig our way out of this ditch. And, you know, Cherry, you've been working at this for a long time, considering that racial healing and that branding has only been around for about 20, 25 years. Cherry, first of all, tell our listening audience a little bit about you. Why do you do this work?
Sharon, I want to be completely honest with your listening audience. 23 years ago, it was not my desire nor my goal in life to have anything to do with racism. It's as if I had paid my dues in the 60s. And I really didn't want to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. But after looking at a very small group of people, and especially one person, Jackie Cone Newberry, that told me repeatedly that I was needed and my voice was needed, that I really needed to do something about racism, especially the healing of racism. I think that it is very profound for an organization to step out and begin to talk about healing racism. And that only happened because this small group of people that started the Center for the Healing of Racism, which was in our early history known as the Institute for the Healing of Racism, we found in these small conversations around the kitchen table that everybody in this country have been hurt around racism. And it really doesn't matter how you self-identify, Caucasian or white, people of European descent, African descent, Latin descent, Asian descent, it really doesn't matter. We found that everybody have been damaged in this country around racism. And if that is the truth, which we believe it is, there must be a place that we can come together that's safe and respectful to begin to explore our racial conditioning. Mm-hmm. And that's how it began. It didn't begin wanting and desiring to start a nonprofit, but here we are. As one of the founding members, we could have named the organization anything. We could have called it Dismantling Racism, Fighting Racism, Combating Racism, Erasing Racism, but we wanted to really focus on healing. And that's the work that I have been doing for 23 years.
Well, Cherry, that's quite a story. This is just the beginning part of it. And for our listening audience, Jackie Newberry is European American, right?
Or she identifies. Correct.
Yes,
and
yes.
When I bring her into the arena and during the workshops, I often say, oh, well, she's about my height, very blonde, very white. But it was her that was the catalyst to launch me into this arena. And I have to acknowledge that all the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, along these lines as well, so you thought that maybe, you know, you'd paid your dues and you were working very, very hard on this subject or related subject in the 1960s, and then all of a sudden you just got pulled forward into this racial
healing. That's exactly. And believe me, you know, I went on board. I came on board, but kicking and screaming all the way. Once I entered that arena, something happened. And I really have no idea exactly what happened. You know, many people may want to give it a lot of different names, but somewhere along the line, I truly believe that I was chosen to do this. And maybe that's part of where this fire continues to burn so brightly within my psyche, my soul, my heart, is because I was chosen to do this. And I believe that. And if that is the truth, that everything that I need to keep us going and doing the work on racial healing is going to be given to me. I truly believe that. I also learned in doing this type of work, I had entered an arena that gave me so much passion. I entered an arena that made me feel totally alive. And once that begat sensation, you know, really swept over me, I started telling high school kids, college kids, for them to find the thing that they love doing more than anything else in the world. Because, see, this is what I live for, just one more workshop. Find that thing that gives you passion. Find that thing that you want to get up every single day to do this thing. And then find a way to make a living out of it. And so, with that, I am very, very clear that I am so involved in this fire that this is all I want to do, really.
Well, Cherry, let me ask you a question that many of our listening audience may want to know about. There are many people out in this country in different parts of the world that really are interested in this work, but at some point they just get tired and burnt out. At times, because it seems that they do the same thing over and over, and they at times don't see a lot of progress. And so here you're saying you live for one more workshop. Have you ever gotten at least tired a bit of one more workshop?
No, not at all. And maybe for me, it may be different from a lot of people, because I am working with children as early as 5 years old. I am in the educational institutions teaching little children, middle school, high school kids. So if you get, if you feel that your passion is dwindling, step into the arena with a child. Step into a classroom. And then watch those kids' eyes as you educate them about this thing called racism. I feel that that's another thing that keeps me going, because it's not just adults and it's not just one program. It's so many different programs. Each one of them is different, and in a lot of ways, each one of them are the same. But I'm very clear of what my mission is. I'm very clear what I feel my purpose is. That's working on the healing of racism. So I don't give up, I don't give out, and I don't burn out.
Well, you know, Cherry, I know for a fact that you've been quoted many times around this phrase. This phrase is, if you can't feel it, you can't heal it.
Of course I use it all the time, because it's really the truth. And let me explain that truth in these terms. If you walk into the arena and you're given a very intellectual, very stimulating at times, lecture. And let's say the subject matter is racism. And maybe it is given in such a way that, oh yes, you got it in your head. But it's not hitting nowhere else. You walk out and say, oh gee whiz, that was a very stimulating conversation. The lecture was good. The content was good. But something about it didn't just grab you.
Mm-hmm.
I am working in a way that you may not remember everything that I said, but you will definitely remember the way that I made you feel. And so I want you to feel. I do not want you to anesthetize yourself with whatever substance that you use, even though it may just be coffee, you know, caffeine, maybe a lot of sugar. I want you to feel this thing. I want you to feel the psychological and emotional damage that this thing have caused to people. So I say repeatedly, if you can't feel it, you can't heal it. If it's only going to be stuck up in that part of the brain that deals with intellect, it's going to be a slow progress in getting humanity to walk forward, to take big leaps and bounds.
Well, you know, Cherry, we could talk about this for another 10 minutes alone. We have about 2 minutes before we break, but continuing on this theme a bit, is this to say that people who interface with you over the years or come to your workshops are made to feel great shame and fear when you say that they'll remember how you made them feel? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sharon, I've never worked in the whole 23 years with guilt and shame. I've never did that. I've never, ever attacked anyone in a workshop setting or in my private life and called them a racist. You see, it's nowhere in the world that I can use this type of language 24/7 and sleep with a white man at night. And see, my husband is Austrian. My husband is blonde, white, and blue eyes. The majority of my family members are white, blonde, and blue eyes. It's nowhere in the world I could do that all day long and sleep with a white man at night that I've been sleeping with for 31 years, you see. So I think that to be able to find that balance, how do you tell the truth and give that truth in such a way that white people don't feel you bashing them? And see, this is what happens all the time, that they're not going to show up at the workshop because they want to protect themselves and they don't want to get bashed. Well, I don't blame them. So,
well,
no,
know,
that's not the way that I work. But we have to tell this story. We have to get to those feelings, and it can be done without guilt and shame.
Well, I know that about you for sure. I just wanted to make sure that our listening audience knew that about you and the way that you work, Cherry Steinwender. Well, you know, we're coming up to our break, and we will be right back with Mrs. Cherry Steinwender.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com. Many people are seeking to make a difference in the world, but few actually have the tools to do so. Every week, host Mary Beth Lodge and her guests will have you thinking forward and will give you the tips to keep your life, goals, priorities, and choices on track. The result is an easier, happier, and more inspired life. The name of the program is What Matters. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. What really matters is the positive changes that you'll bring to your life and the world just by listening. What does the new health care law mean to you? Why is the country facing a deepening deficit? Can it be reversed? If education is important to fund, shouldn't we insist on seeing results? Do we have a workable energy policy? Who's calling the shots? Tune in to In the Public Interest with host Mike Hudson. We'll cover public policy, everything from taxes and spending to health care and other threatened entitlements. If it's in the public interest, it's in your interest to know. In the Public Interest can be heard live every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Come back to your senses. Imagine a radio show that will help you recover your common sense. Host Leah Brenda Smith is a health and wellness specialist who will explain techniques designed to help you recover from the stress of your life. It's all about how you respond to your thoughts. A little bit of self-awareness can go a long way in helping you to relax and enjoy your life. Tune in to Come Back to Your Senses Radio, live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com. You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Oh, thanks for coming back with us. We're with Mrs. Cherry Steinwinder, who's the founding member of the first organization to brand itself as Racial Healing from Houston, Texas. She's the executive director and also an author of a very good book that we're going to talk about in a few minutes. Well, before that we went on break, Cherry, we were talking about the way that you do this work that keeps you going. And you mentioned that you couldn't go to bed and sleep with your white husband and talk badly about white people, basically. Have I got that right?
That's exactly what I said. And it is really the truth. I love my husband. My husband supports this work. My husband has been supporting this work as long as I've been in it. Even though in the very beginning, coming from Europe, coming from Austria, you know, his idea of life in the United States was based really on the movie series Roots. And that's what he knew, and that was his foundation. And, of course, it took a little while to get him into the arena where I felt he could really get it. And so with this man supporting me all of these years, and I often use the words from the song by Bette Midler, "The Wind Beneath My Wings," and he really is. I can't, with all fairness to him, with fairness to my 50-plus white in-laws, walk around here doing this type of work with all of this guilt and shame and bashing white people. So, no. It's not productive. I don't think it's productive anyway. What I've heard probably about 22 years ago, that for white people to be in the arena wanting and desiring to do this type of work, if they are made to feel shame all the time, what happens a lot of times is that the people of color have to take care of them. You know, they're walking around, poor me, I'm so guilty and I'm feeling so shame, and, you know, my people did A, B, C, and D, and all too often it's the person of color that's hugging them, patting them on the back and everything else, trying to get them strength to keep going. But I think that is a very powerful position to be able to hear the information, to do the self-examination, to reflect on the information, and then look at the information and come from a position of power. Yes, and if there is some guilt and shame. I would never advise anyone to stay in it and waddle in it for the rest of your life. You know, maybe you could use it for a little while, but find strength in it to dust yourself off and keep going. Because I want you to be powerful. I want you to be in that arena, clear thinking, and rolling up your sleeves and ready to serve as allies for people of color in order of doing this work. And we, too, will serve as allies for you. So I don't want to re-damage you. I don't want to re-traumatize you with all this guilt and shame.
Well, Cherry, once again, you've said so much, incredibly so much, because it's as if this is not just an intellectual process for you or something that you do. This is what you live every day. Is that right?
When I asked high school students, I'm walking into a classroom, and the classroom is very, very diverse. And I asked the students, I said, well, you see, I can see your classroom. I know what the classroom looked like, but I want to know who sit around your kitchen table. I want to know who you invite home to celebrate marriages, to commemorate deaths, for birthdays, all of those ways that we celebrate the passages of life. And all too often, very few kids will raise their hand. Yeah, they are diverse in the classroom, but they're not diverse in their real physical personal space. So then I start to tell them how I live my life. There are 5 women, 3 of them in Houston, Texas, that call me mother, that have adopted me as their surrogate mother, from Taiwan, from Hong Kong, from Guatemala, one daughter of European descent that's living in right outside of Providence, Rhode Island. So, and I always say my baby is from Taiwan. These are the people that I live with, that I spend my life with. So, no, this isn't just something that I get up and do as part of my work. This is my life. This is what I live. And so that's what I want other people to live in that space, not just go out and give a workshop, but to be able to know what you're talking about, because you know it, because you live it.
Well, Cherry, you know, it didn't get by me, one of the things that you just said about maybe what also sustains you in this work and why you don't get burnt out and you don't give up, that's for sure. And when you said that you want other people to be powerful, clear thinking, and to be allies to each other, how powerful is that, Cherry?
And that is, and I really wanted to chime in on that we can be wonderful, positive allies for people of European descent. I wanted to really say that because there's a workshop, as part of the workshop that I conduct, there is a form, I don't know where it came from at the time, but it lists probably about 25 things that people of color want from whites as their allies. Uh-huh. But I hadn't found anything that says, well, what do whites want? And so I intentionally give them a sheet of paper and ask that question. I want y'all to talk about it, to write it down, and how can we as people of color be allies to you? That's a very powerful concept because a lot of times they've never thought about it. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how many people of color ever thought about it. So this thing have to work both ways. You know, it have to also work that if I'm going to ask anybody from the GLBT community to show up and stand side beside me and work on racism, I have to also be able to stand side by side as a fantastic, powerful ally to work on homophobia with them, you see. So mm-hmm. This ally, being allies to each other, is a very powerful concept. And that's what I want.
Well, you know, Cherry, I'm just wondering if we have really hit on some of these patterns and methods that lie underneath the floor that holds you and this Center for the Healing of Racism up. You live it. You live for that next workshop. and you know what your mission is and you know what you want out of it for other people, not just for yourself. You want them to be powerful, clear thinking, and allies. Is that what this foundation is about? Plus, you really seem to like it. Kind of a tough subject.
One of the things that if you would ever call my office, the very last thing that you will hear on that message tape is to internalize oneness. Mm-hmm. You see, for a lot of people, they understand and get this whole concept of oneness in their head. But I want you to move this from your head to your heart, where you really internalize that we are one human family. Mm-hmm. And to me, to move it from the head and to move it to the heart, where you know without a doubt that we are members of the same human family. And I guess that's the reason that it's so easy for me to go out and adopt all these children or have all these young women adopt me. And even my marriage, the foundation of my marriage, you see, is that you can believe something and you can really believe something. And there's a difference when you really, truly believe it, because to truly believe it will move you into acting that thing out.
Now, Jerry, hold on a minute, because let me make sure that I understand what you just said, because if we're really committed to getting this done in terms of the healing of racism, then we will do it. We will actually believe it and keep working on it until it gets done. Do I have that right?
That's exactly right. It's no such thing for me as that, well, I'm going to quit today. It's just no such thing. My husband plays the lottery all the time. And he said to me, if I ever win the lottery, I don't want you to think that you're going to quit doing what you're doing. I'm just going to build a bigger building so you can do more. And then he followed it up with, because racism haven't taken a break, because racism haven't quit.
Well, that's a sure is a fact. Now, we could talk another half hour on how racism is that powerful anti-element that we were born into, that it is very strong, a very strong pull against our basic humanity. And, you know, along those lines, in the couple of minutes that we have left, I want to begin our shift to the work that you do with children. And there's a quote here by you. I want you to understand that we all belong to the same human family. I do this because I want to connect you to who we really are. Now, you say this to first through eighth graders, do you not, Cherry?
And in fact, and the way that I often say it to everybody, I don't care how old you are, that is, as human beings, we were born, we came into the world wanting and desiring connections with all human beings. That's who we really are. And because of this thing called racism, it has taken that part of who we really are away from us. And it is up to us to reclaim who we are, wanting and desiring connections with all human beings. That's who we are.
Well, that's quite a testament, I'll tell you. Now, this work with middle school boys and girls and even first graders, we've got to talk a lot more about this, Cherry, because I think that you have produced as an author a book that we need to delve into a little more and find out how that works. And this is part of what maybe keeps you going, too, in that you've started to write some of this out, of what you already know and have been doing for years. Is that not true?
Of course. And, of course, the research, enduring research on all of this stuff, that's another thing when you get another aha moment and you learn all of this stuff that, you know, no education institution is teaching you. That's a real aha moment.
Well, I'll tell you, we'll be right back and talk with Mrs. Cherry Steinwinder more, especially about what keeps her going as it relates to our children.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Each week, Jimmy Gould brings you the stories and the people that you want to hear about. Tune in to A Current Life to hear about the journey to success, how our guests became the people they are today, and the highs and lows they experienced along the way. Each hour will leave you inspired and entertained as Jimmy gets up close and personal with every week's guest and shares ideas you can identify with and apply to your own life. A Current Life with Jimmy Gould airs Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Listen for Trust Across America every week on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in as host Jordan Kimmel is joined by national experts in the fields of accounting, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability, as well as companies that are applying strategies that are enabling them to be recognized as doing the right thing by the American Trust Awards. Your host Jordan Kimmel is himself a trusted professional with years of experience in applying strategies and consulting with today's leading firms. Trust Across America is heard Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Well, welcome back to our show. We're with Mrs. Cherry Steinwinder, who's one of the founding members of the first healing racism organizations in the world to really refer to itself as Racial Healing in Houston, Texas. She's also an author of a book that we were just getting ready to talk more about. Well, Cherry, the book that you have authored is titled Bread is a Simple Food, Teaching Children About Cultures. This might be an extension of what keeps you also engaged and active in this work. Tell us about this book and how it came about.
The book, well, at first it didn't start out as a book. For the last 15 years in elementary and middle schools, I've been conducting a workshop that I called Opening the Bread Basket. And it came to me probably at 2 o'clock in the morning when that window of creativity happens and the world is still and quiet and I'm able to be quiet, that we really needed to develop something for younger children. And this was probably 10 years later after working with adults. And in that space, I realized that all cultures eat bread. Mm-hmm. And at the time that this came to me, I had no idea how vast this thing was. So I set out on a quest in Houston, Texas, to go from vendor to vendor and find out all of the different breads that cultures or people eat. And it really blew my mind. It is really an educational experience to shop for all of this bread. So I would take bread from at least 25 different cultural groups into the classroom. And I used the bread as a medium to show the children that bread come in different colors, different sizes, different shapes, and different textures. But it's all bread, and it's all mm-hmm. good. Mm-hmm. Just like little boys and girls come in different colors, different sizes, different shapes. But we all belong to the same human family. And so I take the children through this exercise, and I learn that so many breads have long histories, and many of them, their origins are very fascinating. Well, after doing this and showing the children and having them totally excited about seeing what bread will be pulled out of that bread basket next, I all of a sudden change my whole demeanor, and I become very sad, and I try to position my whole body as if I'm going to cry. And then I say to the children that little children are repeating things that Miss Cherry know they heard big people say, and these things make Miss Cherry very sad. And sometimes Miss Cherry just want to cry, and believe it or not, sometimes I've actually started crying in the classroom because it's so emotional, and to see them hanging on to your every word. And then I said to them, some of those hurtful things that little children are saying that they heard big people say, I don't like you because of the shape of your eyes, the straightness or curliness of your head, the lightness or darkness of your skin, et cetera, and et cetera. And that makes Miss Cherry very sad. And you would not believe the way the children, they are hanging on to your every word. Mm-hmm. And then I ask them to do me a favor at the very end of the workshop. I want them to know that that's not true, because all children are beautiful and we all belong to the same human family. And after 14 years of conducting these workshops, I knew I had to have a book published so that these stories around all of these different breads can live forever. So that's how the book came into being. What is very interesting about the book, that every child in the book, I know them personally. It starts out with Injara, a little girl named Gennett here in Houston, Texas, whose mother is Ethiopian and father is Eritrean. So she's part of my life. And even when I use marble bread to demonstrate the beautiful children who have one parent that's light-skinned and the other one dark-skinned, and how they came together to make this beautiful human being, those two kids in the book both have African parents, one and European parents. I know them personally. Sharat Patel in the book, from South Asian descent. Well, he's an adult now, and he is just finished medical school, and he's a doctor, I think, in Mississippi. So I know all of these people because these are the people I spend my life with. As I said, around my kitchen table, the world is there.
Well, Cherry, you know, as you were unfolding this, there's just this emotional content to it. So the book that you've written kind of explains all this and the exercises and the workshops that you do. But what's got my attention is that you have brilliantly figured out a way to showcase this concept to the youngest of the young, by the physical representation of something that they're familiar with, like bread, that bread is nourishing. We know that, you know, that most everybody would consider bread nourishing and as you said, good for us. And then that there's all of this, a long history about the different breads that various children and adults, for that matter, may not even know about, that you bring forward, and then the emotional content of how, when someone doesn't believe in the one humankind, that you feel sad. You feel sad. Wow. Wow. I don't know what you're going to do for an encore, Cherry. What are you going to do for an encore after that?
Well, Cherry, there's always one more workshop. But we were talking at the break about another exercise that I created for middle school and high school students, and it's the bandage exercise. And I called it the bandage exercise, and I actually, you know, figured out a way to use stickums in the workshops, because bandages sometimes will cause, if children have a lot of hair on their arms, you know, cause them to have an ouch moment. But as little children, I realized that whenever we hurt ourselves, regardless if it's a scrape, a cut, sometimes there's a psychological component to putting a bandage on it, if just an adult would put a bandage on it. So I often go into classrooms with all of these bandages, and I have the children give me the negative stereotypes that they have heard, or if they hear them now, about people that look like them, would it cause a hurt? Mm-hmm. And then I ask them to give me those negative stereotypes, and then when I read them, what they have given to me, I ask them to put a bandage on a visible part of their body so that everybody can see it. Mm-hmm. And to make it fun for them at the same time, that if you want to, every time a negative stereotype is read, say, ouch, then put a bandage on it. That's been one very powerful workshop, very powerful. And well, I can never forget the young person that came up to me when I did this in June in Georgetown, Texas. He said, this is the most powerful workshop I've ever been to. So it's all of those things that continue to kindle this fire. You know, it's just like every little thing is used to put on the fire, and the fire keeps blazing.
Well, you know, along those lines too, Cherry, with this particular exercise and what keeps you just on fire and ignited in this work, that I think you mentioned at break, you don't give them the negative stereotypes. These stereotypes are coming from children. They
tell you
what they are.
And you will be blown away of the negative stereotypes that kids have. They already have them. And sometimes they have taught me stereotypes that I didn't know.
Oh, my gosh.
From these little kids. And I remember in one middle school, the teacher, she was so blown away until she took the stereotypes that they wrote down and brought to her principal, because she wanted the principal to know the space that these kids are walking in.
Now, how old are these particular children that do this bandage experiment or exercise?
Oh, they're in middle school and high school. So middle school would start around 15, 13.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, around 13.
Right. Probably so. I'm with the junior high crowd. I never made the transition to the middle school name, so I know the ages have shifted a bit there. Well, Cherry, that's just wonderful. And once again, you combine a physical representation of something that they can actually lock into, as well as emotionally attached to what's happening in their world. That sounds just excellent to me. Well, Cherry, I know that we don't have that much time left, but I do want to see if you have a few comments about any current trends that you see that are going on with school children, especially over the last 20 years or more. Anything that comes to mind?
I think, well, first, if you want to go back that far, I would like for the radio audience to know that really I am working now with the third generation. If you look at the people that attended these workshops starting in, 1989, mm-hmm. and they have had children, and now their children have children. So it's interesting to know that, you know, you are now working with the third generation. The mm-hmm. trend that I see over and over again, and many people have talked about this, have written fantastic papers about it, but I truly feel that there's still a lot of work that needs to be done around unaware racism.
Unaware.
And internalized racism. I feel that so strongly, even though I am very well aware that 3.5 years ago, that the hate groups in this country went on a surge. They got bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. I am very well aware of that. I'm mm-hmm. very well aware that the fear that they are operating from, as well as the fear that they are causing to a lot of human beings within this country. What I am also very well aware of, that for me, this is not the most toxic form of racism.
Mm-hmm,
no,
mm-hmm.
It's not. The most toxic form of racism that I get my hits from, because I have to interact with good, well-meaning people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they call themselves Christians or whether they call themselves Jewish, whether they call themselves, you know, Hindus, Buddhists, it really doesn't matter. I have to interact with them all the time. So my hits will come from them more than it would come from those independent hate groups, which is probably around 1,200 independent hate groups in this country right now.
Mm-hmm.
But if good people walking around so unaware that have not taken the opportunity to examine, to go deep inside themselves,
mm-hmm.
to be able to look at this stuff, that how we've all been socialized in this country, and to be able to say there is that possibility that some of that stuff is within me. And I don't want to be that way. So I'm going to work hard to see how much of this I can root out from my psyche. You see, the other part is that internalized depression that's ugly,
mm-hmm.
that is so venomous, that ugliness when too many people of color, regardless of what cultural group they're from, that believe the very negative stereotypes, the caricatures about who they are, have been trained, I said, as Malcolm X said, to hate themselves from the top of their head to the bottom of their feet. Believe that's who they are. And they act it out. And we act it out in the only arena that's safe for us. We act it out on each other. Hi, black on brown. I'm black on black crime, brown on brown crime. And it's almost as if to say that I hate myself, therefore I can destroy anything that look like me. That to me, those two areas, unaware racism, whether that unaware racism is intentionally or not, and internalized racism. This is still the majority of work that have to be done.
So we need to move that needle, somehow provide a means to get at those two things as part of, I think we really refer to that as part of the pathology, the deep part of the disease.
Of course it is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Cherry, we have we're going to skip break, by the way. We have a question that came in over the internet from one of our ardent listeners, Ron, from Dallas, Texas. And his question might relate to this. He says, many seemingly well-meaning white people profess being colorblind and non-racist. What do you find to be the most pervasive racist belief that many of them unknowingly harbor that they don't recognize as being racially problematic? What do you think, Cherry?
Well, first of all, I would like very much to ask Ron, first of all, if he have a condition that we call colorblind. I'm sorry, but I don't know the medical term for it. But I would like to know very much of how you convince yourself that you don't see color and you're colorblind. I would really ask, like, to start there. Because I've had this said to me over and over and over again. And often I challenge the person by saying, first of all, what color is this dress that I have on? And, oh, they chime in right away. And what about my shoes? And I'll probably give them a few other things that I'm wearing. And they could name all of that. I said, oh, you can see all of that, but you can't see my color. So how do you convince yourself not to see my color?
Mm-hmm.
Other thing, too, what I really feel, that so many little white children have been trained by adults not to see color until mm-hmm. it creates a type of mental illness. I'm going to call it a mental illness where they can't even trust what mm-hmm. they are seeing. And so since somebody they loved and trust the most said they don't see it, some way or another they have to try to rationalize it in their own heads. I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing it. And it comes out, I don't see it. I want you to see it. I really want you to see it because it says a lot about who I am. I don't want to be invisible. My color is, it says a lot. I want you to see it. But at the same time, I want you to appreciate it. Mm-hmm. I want you to look at me as another member of the human race, as if you were looking at a flower garden and every one of those flowers are different color and you are appreciating each and every one of them. Don't walk up to a flower garden and say, I don't see color. So I think that in itself says a lot, that I think that people really need to examine that. Why is it so easy to say that?
Well, here we go. Again, Cherry, it seems like that the rules change when we start talking about quote-unquote race and color. So we can see a flower garden, we can see trees, we can see a dress and what people are wearing. And then when the conversation shifts to our personhood, all of a sudden the rule changes, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, boy, oh boy. Well, Cherry, I tell you, we have about 8 minutes to go here. And so let's see what we can do to find the time to talk a little bit about the work that you're involved with on a global racism level with the United States State Department and them sending over 50 dignitaries to the Center for the Healing of Racism to find out about, quote unquote, this American brand of racism. Tell us, what is this about and what do you tell them?
Well, over probably the last 15 years, it's been very, very interesting to host and sit with people from all over Europe, from South America, from South Asia, from Africa. And I remember after that massive genocide that took place in Rwanda, that they wanted to know how to prosecute at least 350,000 people for the crimes against humanity, for that genocide. And so they came to us, and we talked a lot about internalized racism and the thing that set a lot of this into motion in the first place. Mm-hmm. When the women from Afghanistan came and sitting across this big table using, you know, the translating equipment, and they travel with translators. And I'll never forget the woman, the women from Afghanistan said, if it's anything at all that we can do to help women of African descent in the United States, we stand willing to stand by your side. Last year, we had a delegation of 14 people that were school teachers from Poland, and they wanted to learn from us how to teach about the Holocaust in Poland. And then at one time in one setting to have people from the Israelis and the Palestinians at the same time to be able to look at this thing called racism. And so it's been very, very, very interesting. It is. So what can I say? How do I sustain the fire? Maybe I'm not the one sustaining it. Maybe it's all of the human beings that have put little chips or big logs on this fire that continuously keep it blazing.
Well, you know, Cherry, along those lines, I was really curious, and maybe our listening audience too, well, what do you tell them when they come to visit? What are they surprised at, or what seems to be of interest to these dignitaries and people from other countries about the American brand of racism?
Of course, when you're talking to them, you have to give them the history. And that history, I often say, we're going to talk about people of African descent being enslaved. But what I really want to talk about is not so much about slavery, but in this country that I was not a full human being. I want to talk about how I was bendable from one master to another. I want to talk about how even during the time that we fought the Civil War in order to be able to the North and the South, I want to talk about how little young white kids were sent out to fight this war for Southerners to keep their slaves and tell those little white kids that nothing's going to happen to you because you have right on your side. Because it is, you to own slaves, it's almost like it's your godlike duty. I want the people from Europe to know this history. And in knowing this history, to look at their history. Because maybe there's parallels to their history that they can understand the conditions of their country. In Austria, where my husband is from, for years they denied there was no racism in Austria.
Right.
Because
right.
I knew the nature of the beast. I saw it everywhere. Mm-hmm. And in 1992, I even told them, racism is going to tear up this beautiful country. Because I could see it. I could see how the Turks were made second-class citizens. And so by learning from this history and learning from these stories, they can look at their own country to be able to understand some of the same dynamics that's going over there. But maybe the people are different. Or maybe the countries of the targeted group may be different. But to just throw up our hands all the time and say, oh, gee whiz, there's no more racism, when even my husband, because he understands the nature of American racism, can go to Austria and see it there.
Well, I tell you, Cherry, this has been a wonderful hour, and I know that we could talk more. We're going to have you back. And want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. This is Mrs. Cherry Steinwinder, Executive Director of the Center for the Healing of Racism in Houston, Texas. Thank you so much.
And to you, Sharon, thank you.
Thank you again for listening today. Please join host Sharon E. Davis for another edition of A Safe Place to Talk About Race next Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll talk then.